So glad that you're joining us. We've got Sam on here, and you'll see him in a second, and we have Kevin as well. And this really isn't a book critique, a book review. This is simply to talk about the themes of the book and let it stir us as well. And I'd like to start with, first of all, why I read this book. I've been hearing about this book from other people for quite a bit of time. But really the catalyst, what pushed me over the edge to get the book and to read it, was Bob Kane's comments to me on the chat line on Basecamp. And he had told me that, you know, he was reading a couple books and God was speaking to him and doing things in his life. And he mentioned the two, and one was Poke the Box. The other one I understood, but I was curious about why Poke the Box. And he had given me a few quotes from the book. And I thought, I've got to read this book. I mean, he was encouraged. He was hopeful. He was courageous because of it. And I wanted the same thing. So I got the book. And it really impacted me, the things that I read. Now, let me just say right off, I don't know if Seth Godin, who's the author of the book, is a believer. I kind of think not, because at one point in the book he says, so what do you need to start? You need to start a company, you need to start a product, you need to start an organization, you need to start a message, you may need to start a religion. And as soon as I heard that, I went, okay, you can't be a believer, because a believer wouldn't just throw out the idea of starting a religion. Anyway, he has some great thoughts in this. And so Sam has read the book as well about a year ago, and we'd like to talk about it. And we have Kevin Miller on the phone, because Kevin Miller's job, his vocation, his calling, is to get people to poke the box using Seth Godin's terms. So, and we all just love to listen.
Though he hasn't read the book.
Though he hasn't read the book. He should have written the book.
Yeah.
So let's start with this. I don't think that the expression poke the box, which is the title of the book, is the best kind of a turn of a phrase to describe what he's trying to say. So let me ask you, Sam, right off, what would you name the book, or what words would you use to describe what Seth was after in the message that he wrote, the manifesto, as he calls it?
Dang, that's a tough question, Gary. Let me answer the question that I'd like to answer. No, that's fine. Here's the deal. Seth sells me in the book when he talks about how we've been trained in a lot of ways to just conform to the world around us. He said, if you look at the 20th century, schools are all about confirmation. They're all about teaching you to avoid error. Do everything the way everybody else does it. Don't make a mistake. Don't, you know, get an A on that test. He says factories, they teach you how to, you know, put that widget, screw that bolt on exactly the same way, because everything is designed to do it efficiently, to do it most cost effectively. But we're not trained to be creative. We're not trained to start. We're not trained to take initiative. And so I would say the book is, he calls it poking the box because he has a great story about poking the box, but he's really saying, I'm going to teach you how to be creative. I'm going to teach you how to start, how to make something new, and how to ship it, how to bring it to fruition. Not just do it the way everybody else has done it, but to do something new, to do something bold, to do something innovative. And I love the book. I love everything about the book except the title, Poke the Box, because it's so much more than the title promises.
Right, right. And you know, and I have three words that I would probably use to describe the book, and that would be desire, create, deliver, because that's what I got from it, right? Desire. Go ahead and desire and get in touch with your desires. Deal with them, own them, then create the desire, whatever that is, and then deliver it. And deliver it's a big part of his message is, you know, you can't just, don't just think about it. Don't just try to understand your desire, but actually deliver it. So that those would be my three words. So desire, create, and then deliver. So,
or I would say another way to do it is he says, just do it. In fact, he doesn't even say just do it. He says, do it. He says, you can do it. Just start doing it. I mean, it's very inspirational in getting me to say, I can be different. I don't have to be mediocre. I don't have to conform. I don't have to be the way the world is. I can do something different. I don't have to be a cog in the factory.
Yeah.
And so I would say the book is about teaching us to do it, whatever it is, for different ones of us.
So, Kevin, why don't you just react to that so far?
Well, I first saw Scott's, is it Stackelhouse? He said, I'm so pragmatic for some of these books, I think. I have to do the work. It just comes across as rah-rah, but not substantive. Man, you're barking up my tree, Scott. I read and see so much of this stuff, and I'm a huge Seth Godin fan, and I espouse a lot of the same things, but I'm so cautious or concerned with it because I think people hear a lot of it, and it is easy to rah-rah. How do we actually apply that? How does it come out in life? And that's where I tend to step back and look and say, what's not working? You know, where is the pain from people coming from? Where is the dissatisfaction coming from? And then as we see as a culture that we have far more people we have less people doing things, we have less people making stories, creating stories, and far more people spectating. When I see that continue to grow and I see a guy like this and he comes out with these perspectives, and puts them in such great wording, that's where I see the benefit and the application of this, of saying, yeah, we have people who, exactly what you said, Sam, we go to school and we're taught to conform, we go to college taught to conform, we go into a job taught to conform, and we can hear about, you know, you need to try stuff, fail, don't look at failure so bad, and we can nod our heads, but when it comes to the day-to-day stepping out the door, now I am seeing more and more people who are just crippled and enabled in it. And they have these desires. They hear Gary talk and they say, yeah, I do have these desires, but to actually go out and do something on their own, starting from scratch, we have less and less people doing it. We have a bigger desire, less people doing it. That's where I see the problem. And so when I saw Gary's pulling out the quotes that impacted him from this book, I thought, oh my gosh, and I contacted him immediately. I said, I want to talk about this. And he said, well, join us on the call. It's a big deal.
Yeah, and so Scott, I love your comment about this. And here's, you know, as I was thinking about this book, I was thinking about the message, and as a believer, I'm wanting to go back to Scripture and say, well, what does Scripture say about this? Because I can be motivated in a lot of ways, but it may not be the truest thing about life and our walk with God and why we're here. And so I came across this verse that I'm sure you're all familiar with. It's Ephesians 5:15, which says, be very careful then how you live, not as the unwise, but as the wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And the phrase, redeem the time, as I said here, or make the most of every opportunity, literally means to do something with intensity and urgency. And I remember hearing years ago a phrase that came out of Martin Luther King's speech, the famous I Have a Dream speech. One particular phrase, and many people have used it for their books and for different things, but the phrase was the fierce urgency of now. And I was captured when I heard that, because that's the truth. There is a fierce urgency to now, right? We live in a battle, like the verse said, so it's fierce. There is an urgency. There are opportunities that God creates and says, now I need you to walk into this. I need you to offer the weightiness, the glory, the splendor of your life in this place at this time. It's been choreographed. Do it. But, Kevin, like you're saying, I mean, we have to resist the passivity, which I think mainly comes from fear. And so, anyway, this is what I thought that Seth Godin did such a great job is trying to bring this idea of don't just think it, don't just create it, but actually deliver it. Do the hard work of delivering.
Is that a question for Kevin?
No, that was into my comment. Now someone else say something.
You're doing great. The fear is, and Gary, you're gracious in saying that this is what I spend my time really trying to draw people to do, and yet I am always surprised when I find that I myself have fallen victim to it, and there's something that I am not shipping, I'm not delivering, as Seth talks about, because of a fear, and it's so easy to miss. But, you know, I will say that I was fortunate to grow up in a home where I saw my dad. He was a serial entrepreneur, people would label him as, and he tried lots of stuff, and when it failed, it just didn't faze him much. It was one of the best gifts I ever got, is I got to see, you know, failure, which he just thought of as learning. And his thing, you know, as a kid that kind of pissed you off was, you come up with a problem. He says, well, it's not a problem. It's an opportunity for a solution. Shut up, Dad. I know. Okay. But it was true. And so we sat there. Okay. What's the idea? And, you know, I find today it's one of the best gifts that I got. And it's a very rare gift. The people that I find, especially guys who are the most, gosh, in your words, I guess, you know, disassociated from their heart, are the ones who had a father specifically who went into the job for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, put food on the table, which is honorable, but that's all they ever saw. Those are the ones I see that are the most uncomfortable with going out, even though they look at that and go, man, I want something better for that, but they have no, you know, equipping. And I look at it, it's learning a different language. It'd be like me learning math, which is a different language for me. It's a different language, but if you want to meet that desire, there's going to have to be some new habits. And yeah, dealing with the fear and learning to try stuff, it's such pithy stuff to throw out, but it's huge. That's why we have a guy like Seth Godin who tries to put it into a book and get the message out.
Yeah. Okay, so let me give you another story then, Sam. I want you to then tell us what maybe one thing at this point, the thing that impacted you, captivated you, moved you the most, but... So I want to tell a story. This is where I like the title, Poke the Box. So last Tuesday morning, a friend of mine and actually a board member of the Noble Heart said, hey, let's get together. I've got some marketing ideas, some ways for you to build a platform. So we got together, and again, we're good friends, and we're sensitive to each other's hearts because we are for each other's hearts. And he mapped out some ideas, and he said, now listen, Gary said, I'm just throwing in ideas. I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. I don't want you to go down a path that's going to take you out. I realize your capacity is limited. And he was kind of saying these things to me. And I was able to look at him and say, Mark, let's poke that box. Let's poke it. You know, you just think about that, right? Just poke it and see what happens. Not be afraid of it. Not stand back. Not turn our back to the box. Not just stare at it and walk around it. But let's just poke it now. And so that was another one of those times where I felt like God said, now see, I am speaking to you through this. I want you to have the guts to poke it when you don't know what the reaction is going to be when you poke that thing. Or going back, you know, to our language of the idea of desire, create, and then deliver. So I do like the term poke the box because it gives me an illustration, a visual illustration of just poking something. Again, versus walking around it, which is what we do so many times with our ideas, our heart, our desires. So, Sam, what captured you by the book? What phrase or idea?
Okay, well, I actually put the quote up, so I'm going to – it's up there on the chat line, and then I'm going to read it to you. In the book, he says, I'm not encouraging you to be bold and right. I'm not encouraging you to figure out how to always initiate a smart and proven and profitable idea. I'm merely encouraging you to start often. Forever. Be the one who starts things. And I think what he's saying is he wants, well, the thing that struck me was I want, after this, to create a culture inside me, if you will, of starting, of initiating. Not just sort of saying, okay, I've got one idea, I'm going to start a blog. And then, you know, 5 years later I said, yes, 5 years ago I started a blog. That's not what I want. I want to have an internal culture where I become as Scott Stacklehouse says, I want to become a serial starter. I want to be able to start, you know, if I'm sitting in the dining room and I see someone struggling with a tray because they have their coat on and their hat on and, you know, the purse and they can't quite carry anything, I want to be the guy that gets up and carries the tray. Not because of just because of chivalry, but because I want to do the thing that other people aren't doing. I want to have a culture inside me that's starting and doing things different, that's seeing the need that other people don't see and then doing something about it, not just having one idea that I worked on 5 years ago, and I can say, 5 years ago, I'm the guy that started a blog. Instead, I want an internal culture of serial starting.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that struck me, is not just starting once and shipping once, but always starting, continuing to start. In fact, the only way you end up shipping is each day you get up and you start, and actually the product sometimes changes a little bit. As you keep massaging it and playing with it, it changes. And so you're constantly starting, and you're responding to the business world. You're responding to the life around you, to the environment around you.
Yeah.
You know, it actually reminds me of the way software worked when I was in my software business. When I started in the 80s, we had multi-million-dollar software packages. The hardware cost probably $2 million, and the software cost $2 or $3 million. So people would spend literally hundreds of thousands of dollars hiring these monstrous consulting firms to design an RFP, request for proposal. And they would take 24 months, 36 months to write up a document that would be two or three, you know, notebooks full of all the requirements of the software. Then we would take 6 months to respond to it. Then we would make a proposal. They would take a year to respond. Then they would finally buy the software. And so literally from the start of their project to when they went live might be 5 years. By the time I was done, people would typically take 3 months to write a proposal for a multi-million dollar system. We would respond, and then our development was something they've got lots of different names for it, but one of them was rapid application development. I would write a software screen. The client would say, it's not quite that, it's a little bit this. Then I would change it a little bit. They say, yes, I want this, and then we'd change it. And we'd actually be live years earlier than we used to. And we'd be 98% of the way there, and then we're never 100% there because we're always changing a little bit. We're always starting. We're always shipping. We're always moving something. But it was fast. It was now. It wasn't the rigid RFP proposal structure. It was getting something done now, quickly. From start to finish, it's a year instead of 5 years or 6 years. Partly because the business world is changing so fast.
Yeah. So
anyway, so constantly starting.
Yeah. You talked about having this internal environment of starting. You know, I know that our desire is that Basecamp be a place in the Secret Garden where people feel the environment, the culture of starting. And, Kevin, I know you're all about that with Phrasing Academy, is starting, you know, a culture of starting. And I love when Seth Godin says that starting is not an event, right? It's something we do again and again and again. It's a series of events versus I started this day, now I start every day. And he said, you keep starting until you finish, which I love, which feels like my life. I feel like every day I'm starting something. And I don't mean patting myself on the back. I mean it's like starting, 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 and never finishing. But it's the idea of starting, getting to a finishing point. So, Kevin, let me just ask you real quickly, what, as you work with, you know, all these people who, using my words again, the phrases of desire, create, and deliver, what do you think is really important about helping people have a series of starts, not the event of start, but a series of starts until finish?
The area that, as you know, we end up coming back to, and it's fresh in my mind because I was recording some new videos for our new platform today, is coming back to their motive. You know, there's so many things we can talk about for, you know, on this topic. But when I find somebody who has a big enough motive, they'll figure it out. You know, they're not a starter. They have fear. They have risk. We can talk about that. They find a big enough motive, and they'll overcome it. And so we spend so much time looking at that. But I also try to break it down sometimes. I think that we can get into this mode of, yeah, be a starter, take risks, all that. And, you know, not everybody is wired the same way. We have people who are made for the front lines. We have people made for support. We have people made for logistics. But I think with any guy, there's something, you know, you may be a serial entrepreneur, or you may find, I know one entrepreneur in particular, and he tried one thing. Now he had failures along with that, but that one thing kicked butt. So what did he start? One business. That's it, and it did really well. Well, I know more than one. I just know one that's a rock star, but I know, you know, some like that. Whereas I have done a lot of different things, and I think, you know, to look at that, I got to be a starter. I've got to be a whatever. There is something. We're all looking for that key desire, that key talent that we were given. The key thing that we care about, that passion, whatever, all those different words. And, yeah, there's going to be a risk. There's going to be a start. But it doesn't mean you have to become something that you're not. Though, as you know, yeah, you do it once, you'll start exercising some of those starter methodologies. But you may look back 10 years from now and go, yeah, you know what, I'm better at starting. I did start something. But I still, you know, I have other people who are better with that. I really like to finish things. I like to maximize things. I like to analyze things, and that's okay as well. But we do have to start some things. And so I tend to, you know, look at the person and try to discern who they are, how they are, and find what fits them and say, okay, this might be a little uncomfortable. You don't have to become something you're not, but we're all going to have to deal with a little discomfort level if we're going to do something significant.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, I think that I agree with what you're saying, especially about the fact that different ones of us have different personalities, and so we're going to be better at some things than others. And I guess I want to use the word start in two different ways, because when I was in business, I was the starter in my business. You know, if we had a new project that we had to start, they would give it to me. And I had a partner who he could not start his way out of a wet paper bag. But, I mean, he just couldn't. He could not start something. But if I gave him something that was like, if I brought it from 0 to 75%,
yeah,
I was not so good at getting it from 75% to 100. Maybe I could get it to 85%. But he was great at getting it from 75 or 85% to 100. But he had to start. You know, he had to take something. He had to grab it by the horns and say, I'm not satisfied with leaving it at 75%. I want to get it from 75 to 85 or to 95 or to 100. In his own way, he had to start something.
Yes.
So in some ways, yes, some of us are starters and some of us are finishers. But I think in my way, I was a starter and I finished it when I got it to 75 or 85, when I could hand it off to somebody. Then he would start. But I think that we all start in some ways. We have to grab something that fits with our personality, and then we have to say, this is worth me. This is worth my time. This is worth it. I'm going to do it.
Well, and even
I agree with you. There's different personalities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we're getting hung up on the word start. It's not like the only – that's the.
Yeah, I'm willing to use a different word.
Yeah, well, because the other one that we talked about and that Seth did that you pulled out, Gary, was just trying things. There was a guy, Franz Johansson. He wrote the book, The Medici Effect, and in studying entrepreneurs, he said one of the traits that he found is they just try more things. And I think even there, even if you're not a starter, like you said, my wife, she talks about that. She says, I'm not a white paper person. Give me a skeleton, then I'll go. I love the white paper.
Hey, I got a skeleton for her right over here.
There you go. There you go. I love the white paper. But even if I give that to her, or you're the person that, okay, give me the skeleton, then I'll make it better. The ability to have margin or have the have just be open to try things that don't work is significant there. And again, I don't see that in the average school system, workforce. The ability to really try things and fail. And, you know, I had one actual job for 2 years, a real, you know, job with an actual title and all that. And it was as good as it could be because I had an objective. I was given free rein. I had a budget. And I remember saying at that time, and it was quite a while ago, that I loved it because I said, I figure I blow $1,000 a month at least on stuff that doesn't work. But I get to figure out the thing that makes 10 grand or 15 grand. It was a blast. I loved having that, you know, that budget and being self-employed. I appreciate that as well, that I can try things and I suffer when they don't work, but then I get to find the thing that does. I think even just that, being able to try things and, you know, we could get all into the semantics of the word failure, but to, you know, find what doesn't work, to find what does work, is huge. And I see people who aren't able to do that in their day-to-day life, who will pursue it in their hobbies, you know, the chance to do something crazy and to fail. I mean, it's in us. It's in all of us.
You know, okay, I was just talking to a friend of mine about the fact we're going to do this chat, and he reminded me of a great G.K. Chesterton quote, where G.K. Chesterton said, if anything is worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And what he means by that, if it's worth doing, try it. Even if you don't do it perfectly, even if you make a mistake, it's worth trying. If it's worth doing, it's worth trying. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying it's even worth doing badly, which I think is it sort of gives you permission to say, I'm going to try it, dang it. I'm going to try it even if it's not perfect. It's worth doing.
I had a guy publicly, a good friend of mine, publicly criticized me in one of our member classes a few years ago. And he was using me as the analogy to our members, saying, just start. Get a website, put something on it. He said, Kevin's a great example. He's got one of the crappiest websites I've ever seen. But he's been doing business for 2 years, and we're all here because of it. And I guess that was a backhanded compliment, kind of sort.
I think it was a compliment.
But it hit me that because I believed in it, it was a good product, and it was, and the website did suck. It really did, but we were doing business. And I thought, well, I'm grateful for that. And so I've used that as an analogy with folks too. So that backs up your statement there.
Let me jump in. Can I have a conversation with you guys?
No, Kevin, did I tell you about? No.
Okay, wise guy. I can hit the stop the camera button on you. Okay, anyway. So what I want to do is just say something, interject something you guys said before, and that is we're not talking simply at the level of starting a business, starting a company, starting a ministry. We're talking about starting trying what God has given you that he wants you to inject in the situation, right? So it goes back to the same you gave the illustration. You shared the illustration that Seth did about carrying a tray for somebody that no one else will do.
Yeah,
but it's...
Yeah.
You know, God may give you the ability to see certain things that no one else sees in your setting. It could be in your home, in your church, in your business, in someone you help, or whatever that is. And it may be just trying to step forward and say, can I tell you what I'm seeing? Can I tell you what I think might be hindering this? Can I tell you what I think we should try now? And I will initiate it. We want to make sure we really broaden this idea of trying. And I think that's why I like the idea, again, the words that attract me are, desire, create, and deliver. God's put this desire in your heart. Now create it, whether that's a conversation, it's a message, it's a retreat, it's a get-together, whatever it is. Create it and then deliver it, because I think the greatest way to get clarity about who we are and what God's given us is to offer it, because there's nothing like offering it and seeing it out there that you start to learn how to hone it, right? How to make it better, how to paint it better, how to speak it better, whatever that is. So I think that, and, the truth is that what God has given us, he wants us to offer to others. And we just have to start offering it. I want to throw out something.
Go back to that point you just said, which is you were saying something along the lines of, if we really want to offer it well, we have to keep doing it because it's the only way we're going to learn. Did you say something like that?
Yeah, I don't think I said it that well, but yeah, at least that's what I meant.
Just do a little riff on that a little bit. Explain that.
Okay, a lot of times, and I can do this, and I see people do this all the time, that people will work on something to kind of try to perfect it in their mind to make it, impervious to criticism or whatever. And they work on it, but they never offer it. And the truth is, something cannot grow or become better without offering. We'll never understand the effect of what we've created until we offer it. And then we can look at it and go, oh my goodness, I need to change some things next time I speak up, next time I create, next time I organize, whatever it is. So it is in the offering. I mean, it's just the illustration that Kevin gave, that this guy said to him. The fact is, he decided to, in Seth Godin's words, ship it, right? You can't just think about it. At some point, you need to ship it. He did. The guy was saying, it's not the greatest shipping organism I've ever seen, but it's out there and it's affecting our life. And Kevin right now is in the midst of enhancing his shipping mechanism, his websites and everything else. So,
yeah.
Did that answer it?
Yeah, man, and you're hitting on something, and this is something that was a little humbling to me in my role in consulting with people. Starting businesses, of course, but in consulting with them, where me and my little God complex, and I want to bring it to absolute fruition, and I realize it's impossible, because we always come to a point where, man, this is as much as we know now. I've never done your product or service. I have nothing else to give. We just got to go. We got to start to figure out the next step. So it's impossible. And it made me think, I was thinking today after something you wrote on this, Gary, I was thinking, because I had just seen some movie where the guy was, the long rifle shot, and he's adjusting the sight. So he's sitting there shooting, got the guy with the binoculars. He shoots and he goes, okay, you're a little right. So he's adjusting. Well, the only way he can figure it out and get it dead on is by shooting a live round. You can't shoot blanks and figure it out. I mean, you've got to. And I thought, that's what I find over and over. We can only get so far in our little, you know, down in the basement in our little invention. At some point, we got to get out and just, man, does it work? And that's when we find out, oh, now we need to adjust. Now we need to adjust. Now we need to adjust. So, yeah, to what you're saying, it's just fact. Absolutely.
You see, and the reason I like that is it is just fact, just like Kevin was saying. And the only way we get better is by continuing to do something. And, I mean, offering it out there. You know, you're never going to be the perfect violinist unless you do a lot of concerts where you're not the perfect violinist, where you're getting out there playing and you're getting better and, you know, your parents are first clapping and soon other people are clapping, but you got to keep doing that. And that's the only way you can get better. You're not going to come out of the womb, you know, being the world's virtuoso violinist. We got to just keep shipping something little by little and little by little as we deliver it. Not just as we practice at home in our little living room, but as we deliver it, little by little, we get better.
Right.
You know,
and
what,
so,
what is it that we have to do that has to be 100% perfect right away? What is it? What is it in our life that we have to do that has to be perfect 100% the first time we do it?
Right. And that's the question. I mean, there isn't anything. So here's one of the things you and I talked about earlier this afternoon, and that is, you know, what is it that creates the fear? What is the culture of fear that holds us back from just trying things? And so I'm thinking about this, and I want to again go back to what God says about life, about a relationship with Him, about how things work. And there are two verses that struck me, and I thought, man, if I would live in this reality, I would not be afraid to, you know, try, deliver, start, ship, whatever words you want to use. You just try those things. And so let me just read these to you real quickly, because this was really good for my heart as I looked these two up. And one is, first, everyone's familiar with these, but 1 John 4:8, it says, "Such love has no fear, because perfect love expels all fear. If we are afraid, it is for fear of punishment, and this shows that we have not fully experienced God's perfect love." And so I was just thinking about this idea that if I understood the love of God over my life, I would not be afraid of failing, as if He's going to say, okay, that's it. That's the last stupid thing I'm going to put up with that you do, you know? And there are going to be consequences to that, because you're not growing up, you're not getting any wiser, and you're embarrassing me, and you're wasting my resources. And God just doesn't do that. He just smiles at us and said, way to go. You know, give it a try. I love the fact that you are experimenting with what you understand of what I've put in your heart, and you're doing it for other people. Do it. There's no harm. And even the disappointment that you feel, you shouldn't feel, because I don't feel it for you. So, one, I think, you know, because we don't live in God's perfect love, and that's a growing reality for us, you know, we let fear hold us back from trying, from shipping, from delivering. And then the other verse, again, we're all familiar with, is Romans 8:28. "For we all know that God causes everything to work together for good for those who love God and called according to His purposes." And so, you know, if we believe that and say, okay, God has called me according to His purposes, and He's written my part to His purposes on my heart in the form of my desires, and He continually speaks to me about this. So even if I, you know, discover my desire, I create it and I deliver it, and it doesn't work very well, God says, you know what, I'm going to work that out for your good anyway, and for other people's good. It's all good, because He's in charge. I think it would change the way we live, relate, and think and do.
You know, it's interesting that you're using some of these passages, because after you and I talked, you know, about this book earlier today, I was thinking, I've heard different people say Seth is a believer, I've heard other people say Seth isn't a believer, I haven't Googled it to find out, but I know that a lot of the people who read his book aren't believers, because I've seen a lot of the comments, and it's not like, I don't know what they are, I just know that they're not necessarily believers, and yet they get inspired by this, and the people are trying more things. So I was just taking my prayer time, I happened to be reading Romans 8 today, Gary, just the part that you were reading. Yeah. And I got this passage that said, just a minute, I posted it up here, I want to put it up. It said, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him give us all things? You know, and I thought, that's actually really good. I mean, if I really believe that God gave his only son for me to save me, I think the passage says, if he did that big thing for you, he's also going to do all the other stuff for you. He's going to handle all the other stuff for you. He's going to take care of you. If God is big enough to not spare his own son, he's also big enough to take care of us in these other ways so that we can take risks. You know, as a father, I've used this example before, but for me it's the perfect illustration. I taught all four of my kids to ride a bicycle, and every one of them fell multiple times, and I would not have them do it any other way. If I taught them and they rode perfectly the first time, in some ways I'd be disappointed. Because what they learned about riding, from riding a bicycle and by falling multiple times and struggling through the pain and fear, is they learned how to overcome fear. They learned how to continue to try things, try it until they get it. And as a father, I wanted him to learn that thing. I think as a father, God wants us to learn things, to try things, to fall off the bike, get back on the bike, and keep trying. He's going to deliver us. He's going to strengthen us. But I think it delights him to see us trying and working at it. I think it really does. He's with us. He's shepherding us.
I agree, and that speaks to me, Sam. That's another topic, because I'm struggling. I'm on a journey right now of realizing my inability to be fathered. So there's a topic in and of itself. So what you said there speaks to me. And you know, I've been watching the comment box here, and I saw Scott earlier said, "I'm sorry to speak from ignorance, but are we talking about finding our calling by trial and error?" And I just stuck on that. And as you guys were talking, and I thought, you know, what's the point of this discussion? And Gary, this is your class, but I think we're often focused on, we're speaking to minimization. You know, why are we minimized as people, as men? What is minimizing us? What is keeping us from being the fullness of who we are? And on this topic specifically, what comes to mind to me is that we are kind of back to where we started this conversation. We are in a culture that I think we're all seeing is more and more and more programmed to respond, mm-hmm. not to initiate. And that is minimizing the hell out of us as people. And it's very foreign. And we get people whose desires, the pain of that being in a responsive spectator world is growing, and yet we're less and less and less equipped to initiate, to be proactive instead of reactive. Again, pithy stuff, but it's just as tangible. And I sit down and I talk with people, and it is just palpable, and it's real, and it's tragic. And you know, and to what you said just now, Sam, that with so much reliance that we're trying to have and dependence on God and looking for direction, I still tend to come back to that again. I feel so bad sometimes with these pithy statements, but they're so weighty that it's hard for him to direct us when we're sitting on the couch. We got to get up. We got to walk forward. We got to initiate what we feel he's calling us to even know what the next step is, to let him direct us from there. But again, coming back to what you said, Scott, I think that we're speaking to being minimized by the enemy, minimizing us and not being the fullness of what God has for us in the glory of our life, as Gary would say. And I think there's so much in what Seth is talking about here as a possible non-believer who can't help but find the truth as he looks for it, that we are so responsive, we've got to initiate. And if we're going to initiate, we're going to stumble.
Absolutely, we're going to stumble, and that's okay. But I think, like you're saying, is we got to get up off the sofa. You know, if I think God wants us to try things. If my five-year-old son said to me, "Hey, Dad, can I go out and play football?" I'd say, "Well, you know, you can go out for 20 minutes, but we're going to have dinner in 20 minutes, so don't go very far." But if my 25-year-old son called me up and said, "Hey, Dad, can I go out and play football?" I'd say, "I don't know. You're a grown man. Make a decision. You know, go do something. Don't just sit on the couch. Figure it out." And it's not that I don't want to help my 25-year-old son, but there's a way I want him to take initiative and try something and just make a decision on his own. Mm-hmm. You know, go out and play football and have your wife yell at you because you're late for dinner. But there's a way I want him to grow up into maturity. And I think God wants us to grow up, and he likes us to make decisions. It's not like he's opposed to it, and he does give us direction, but he also likes for us to take initiative and to do some stuff. That's part of the way God is raising us. And it's okay with him when we make it. You know, if my son goes out and plays football and his wife is pissed because dinner's late, well, he'll learn something from it. But I think God, I will delight that he's learning that on his own. And he doesn't need me to hold his hand every single moment, like he did when he was five. When he was five, it was okay for me to tell him every moment. When he's 25, I think it's good that he's making some decisions on his own.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do this. Because we're really at the end of our time, let's go ahead and go around and share any final thoughts. And if you already shared them, you could say that. So let me start with this. What hit me was this idea of what are you so afraid of, Gary? Just try things. It's an adventure. You really have nothing to lose. Now, that's obviously, you know, trying things inside of the, you know, moral and ethical boundaries that God has helped me understand by the presence of the Holy Spirit in my life. I mean, I know what's stupid, and sometimes I do stupid things, but at least I know what they are. And so I think what got me was this idea of just try things. You really have nothing to be fearful of. God put something on your heart. And maybe at this point, for a person, the starting, the initiating, the trying is trying, initiating, starting to discover your desires. You know, if that's what's confusing, then go after it. And that's through conversations. You know, Scott's here because of the online calling course. He's doing it. He's initiating. He's starting. He's trying. You know, it's through all sorts of things. So if it's at the, you know, starting to discover your desires, that's starting. And then once you have them, then it's, well, why don't you create something from that, whether that's a moment with a person, it's a message, it's an organization, it's a product, it's a company, it's a whatever, you know, but then create it and then deliver it. And in the delivery, you learn from it. And I was very struck today. Our church, and, you know, many churches are in 21 days of fasting and praying in the beginning of January, and that's what our church is doing. And as I was praying this morning, actually, yesterday morning, two things came to me, and I've really been pondering this. And two words that came to me as vitally important are courage and humility as far as what's needed now. That I need my life, and I feel like he was kind of saying it's what's needed for the body of Christ. And I thought, isn't it amazing? Because, one, we need the courage to offer, deliver, ship, whatever we want to say. But that courage has to be rooted in the humility of understanding the life and the promises and the goodness of God. Not just our own ability, not denying our own ability, but having courage because we know that God says, hey, you know what? I love you. If you fail, it's no big deal. And in fact, I'll even use it together for your good anyway if you do. You'll grow in this. That we have to have both courage and humility. And that's what I take from this book as well. Just step out in courage and humility and discover desires, create it, and offer it. I just think it's the most fun thing about life, and we do that in a relationship with Jesus Christ. So those are my concluding thoughts. You guys?
You know, I don't know that I can say it better than what you just said. I really like what you said about trying it and trusting in God for it, and just keep trying and don't worry about it. You know, it's okay if we don't do it perfectly the first time. I do think that I personally want to take away from this developing a culture, an internal culture in my heart, in my mind, of trying, being willing, not looking at the success of it, but looking at what I can learn from it and trying again and continuing to move forward. Like you said, I have God on my side. It's okay. It's going to work out. Mm-hmm. It may not be the product that I think it's going to be, but it's going to work out.
Yeah. Kevin?
Yeah, man, I'm stuck on what you said. I'm sitting here writing notes for myself. I'm having my own personal class right here on your son going out and doing things. And that's – I've got – as you guys know, I got seven kids. My oldest is 18. He's a boy. My youngest is 3. He's a boy. And I find myself coming here. We live in the mountains, and I'll come home, you know, and my son, he's done his homework. He's done his chores. And I'm saying, guys, just go. Go, we live in the National Forest. Just go experience something. Do something worthy, not the video games. And I'm thinking, how often do I do that? I did my chores, you know, I did my to-do, my honey-do list. I took care of the kids, put the kids to bed. And God's saying, I have so much out there, Kevin, go. And so I'm sitting here thinking, you know, so often I relate well to my, as God to me, as how I do with my kids. And where I tend to tell my kids, you know, go adventure, go experience life. And I'm sitting here thinking, how often do I miss that? Where God's saying, experience the fullness of me. And then I sit back, or the kids sit back, and they say, well, how do I do this? And I say, just try. If you get stuck, I'll help you.
Yeah.
How often do I not take this? And when, you know, and I tell them, figure it out. Exercise your brains. And I again, how often do I sit back and God direct me? And he's saying, exercise what I've given you. It's such a great analogy with using our kids. That's probably, and you brought me to that, Sam, and talking about your son, that's probably the most clarity I have on my relationship with God is when I get real with how I view my kids. If I can take that to how he views me, it's so much clearer. And I miss it. I sit here and tell my kids stuff, and I'm missing it from my own father.
Yeah. So let's end with this idea. We are encouraging you. We're encouraging each other to all poke some boxes this year. Okay? There are boxes in the form of ideas, desires, convictions that are in your heart right now. And we want Base Camp and the Secret Garden to be a place where we have the freedom, the security, and the help to poke these boxes. Just try it. And so we want to encourage you. You have an idea, a conviction, a desire. Why don't you tell us about it on Basecamp in the forum? Just write about it and let us read about what you would like to poke, what you want to try. You know, again, the idea from desire to create to deliver. And we will be with you in that. But let's all do that this year, because I know that there is something significant and weighty and needed that we need to deliver to this world, to the worlds we live in right now. There is the fierce urgency of now. So.
Yeah, you know, I was saying earlier that what I want to do is develop an internal culture to myself that's starting, initiating, trying, willing to fail. I guess even more than that, I want to see a culture in Base Camp where we're all starting and willing to fail and trying new things, because I think that when I'm in a culture of other people doing it, it makes me do it more. And I think when I do it more, other people will do it more. So, yeah, I don't want it just to be an internal inside Sam culture. I want it to be inside all of us. I think the more we all do it, the more we'll all do it.
Yeah, that's good. So, Sam, Kevin, thank you so much. This was a fun conversation. Everyone that was listening and watching, I hope this was helpful. I hope you're walking away with a little bit more courage or encouragement. And I hope you'll offer what you want to go after to us so we can cheer you on and be with you, and we do the same with you as well. So thank you, everyone, and we will see you next Thursday at the same time.
Thanks, Gary.
See y'all.
Thanks so much.